Table for two, please. Welcome to a podcast about, well, normally it's about TTRPGs, why we love them, why we play them. But for the next couple weeks, in addition to our tabletop role-playing game coverage, we will be talking about Clair Obscur Expedition 33. I am Volpex Valentine, and with me is my co-host Cadmore.
Oh, ho, ho, je suis Cadmore.
Oh, no.
Bonjour à tous et bienvenue. Welcome back to Table for Two.
Oh, no.
As my co-host, Volpe, said, we are reviewing Clair Obscur.
You can't.
Expedition 33. And he sheepishly won't admit it, but we agreed to do really shoddy French accents for this whole episode. So,
Sacre bleu.
Please break out your English to French mini dictionary and be ready to translate, because that's the kind of podcast we are.
Je voudrais un café crème, s'il vous plaît.
Oh God, I can't. That's too much.
I just ordered a coffee with cream. That's about all I can do in French.
Okay. Well, that's more than me, and I've been practicing on Duolingo. So,
oh, there you go! Wow, putting in the time for this podcast. That's research.
I just want to know what the lyrics are saying in the background on the soundtrack of the game. So,
oh, really? Okay, cool.
Yeah, I haven't figured it out yet. So, stay tuned. Maybe that's like episode 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
After I've learned a little bit more, but yeah,
we'll get there. We'll get there. Trust. So for this episode, this chapter of us playing through Expedition 33, and of course you are welcome to play along at home. You are encouraged to play along at home. We will be talking about just the Flying Waters and then the open world section after that, everything up to the Ancient Sanctuary.
And there's some good stuff before.
There's good stuff this episode. This, I purposefully peek behind the curtain. We played the first section and I was like, oh, this is a good chunk. Like this took, I did this in a couple different sittings just because I have other things to do.
No, you don't. Why do you lie to them?
Well, if you go to patreon.com/tableforttwopod, you can make it so that I don't have other things I need.
You
to
can
do.
Guarantee it that this guarantee. Is the only thing we do.
Yeah. More content for sure. I love doing this.
Yeah, and for $7 a month, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good for the bonus content and more to come. Anyway, so I played, that section. I was like, this is pretty good. This is pretty substantial. And then I was a little worried about just Flying Waters. My memory of it was that it was much smaller than it actually was. And then the open world stuff, I had forgotten how much there actually is to do. After that, now, there's some good activities to do out in the world.
Is there?
Yeah. But I think that the small, more manageable chunks allow us to dive a little bit deeper into, the minutiae and the little details of the game and of the story. And then for our next episode, we will be doing the Ancient Sanctuary and the Gestural Village, which is a part of the game I'm very much looking forward to. So let's just start high level. What did you, or rather, let's do a plot summary. Let's sort of summarize what happens in the events of this chapter.
All right. Well, in this chapter, the Flying Waters, you somehow develop the ability to breathe underwater. Can you maybe explain that part to me? Because I think that that's like my biggest takeaway from this section is, how are we breathing underwater?
It's magic, and also it's not real, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yeah, it's made up.
So the magic part, we're just going with plot armor? Okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, this didn't happen, so. And does it look cool?
It looks sick.
Yeah, there
it
you go. That's why.
I just went with the magic reasoning.
Yeah.
I just was like, you enter Flying Waters, and then I'm just like, oh, yeah, okay, this makes sense.
Flying Waters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, because water flies, like in real life, it it flies all the time, so like why not?
Why not?
No, so like, entering the flying waters, you're like instantly, I think that same kind of shell shock that you get when you first enter the world of Lumiere, right? Or land in Lumiere at the start of the game, you're just like blown
You mean on the
away
continent?
on the continent.
Yeah.
Is it not the city? Is it not the
Oh, no, the city is Lumiere, yeah.
Okay. But just I guess both in Lumiere at the start of the game and then on the mainland, the continent, just like blown away by the aesthetics, right? Like the game is incredible. I think that
Oh, sorry. Are you playing it right now?
I brought it up just so I could have the map.
I could see the reflection in your glasses, and I was like, hey, that's the
Can you? It's that good? It's that detailed? Oh, it's the
Yeah.
red, isn't it? You can see the red
Yeah, I
trees.
can see the red trees.
Incredible. It'd be even better if you could see the 33
Yeah, I can see the monolith.
reflected. No, I brought it up so I could have the names to reference on the map.
I see, I see.
But I think so, entering the Flying Waters, immediately the thing that stood out to me was like it felt very, and I mentioned this before in reviewing Lumiere, but as someone that has been to Europe and seen a lot of like Gaudi's work and Dali's work, I feel like there's a lot of inspiration in the architecture for the buildings, but also the like nature, the like bulbous, kind of amorphous blobby
Yeah.
style.
Yeah, it's very exaggerated. It's very surreal.
Well, there's like a kind of a not alien nature to it, but there's a little bit of an alien like
Yeah.
non-human
Yeah.
nature to it, right? Not even
Yeah.
like
A
a
alien in the true, literal sense of the word, as in different.
foreign,
Yeah.
different. And I think that that is really cool. There's like kind of a trippy element to it, right? Like I feel like this would have been a good world to like, or a good section of the game to maybe just be like doing some drugs, as you play through it. I don't know because I don't have any experience with that, but I imagined that this would be a good time to do some drugs while playing a video game. The colors are beautiful. I think that the detail of like little streams of oxygen like coming out of the ground, the really tall seaweed, the
The
like
coral.
root, coral, the anchors, getting to like just stare up above you and watch the marine life just swim around, pulling out the gun and like having the trigger, the crosshairs, and like every once in a while seeing something like flies close enough and it would like flash red. And I'm like, I'm not sure if it was a bug in the game or if it does that intentionally, but there'd just be moments where like the whale would be above you and the crosshair would like go red for a second. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna get fucking eaten by a like I'm gonna be worrying about the Nevrons and then this giant fucking whale's gonna come down and attack me or something. And it could have just been like a bug in the game because I'm not, it doesn't seem like that was intentional, but it was just like a very, it's a very exciting environment to be in.
Yeah, but let's I think before we really deep dive, let's just talk about plot. Like, here are the
Sure.
events that happen in the section that we played.
Okay.
We start with, Lune and Gustav have been separated from Mael. Someone left a note that said Mael's in the house. Was it the house in the
The
weird coral?
house. Yep.
So we arrive in the Flying Waters, which is, gorgeous and sort of surreal as we have described. We find the hut. It's a door, just like sort of built into a rock face. The door opens in sort of a magical vortexy way,
Just sucks us right in.
sucks us right in, and we appear in this place called the Manor. The game calls it the Manor. It is this sort of gold,
Pristine gold overlay.
just like this weird, oddly beautiful and like richly adorned and decorated and furnished looking manor. And curiously, all the doors are locked. Like there's like nowhere to
Let me tell
go.
you, I searched, I took the path of most resistance, which was check every door possible before the one that you're supposed to go to.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
And
Both times.
it wasn't intentional. Usually it's like, oh, I know where I have to go. I'm gonna explore everywhere else before I follow the story. This time I just kept choosing where I thought I should be going, and it was not the right spot.
That's very funny. So eventually, and there's no one in this manor that should be stated. It's like oddly empty for how expansive it is. We find a door that is open, and inside is Mael. She is, unharmed. She is recording her expedition journal when Gustav finds her. They reunite. They, slip. They have this moment of like connection, heartfelt, sort of like deep sadness, but relief and joy that they found each other. And then they slip right back into their sibling, relationship, cracking jokes at each other's expense. And then a giant, floating, faceless man creature appears, who they
Why
call.
you don't know what its gender is? Why are you?
They do refer to it as he. And he can sort of speak. Mael seems to be able to understand him, which is sort of interesting.
There's a lot of just like quiet understand, like no explanation understanding what the other species are saying
Yeah, it
in this
rules.
game.
It's good. He's called the Curator.
And curator, yeah.
It seems to be that he was like looking after her. At first you're like, oh shit, it was a boss fight. But no, he seems to have been looking after her, in some capacity. And lo and behold, he teaches you a new game mechanic, and you do a little training fight, where you learn how to use Mael, because every character has unique combat mechanics in a way that I love. You leave the manor and encounter your first, I believe, yeah, your first Gestrel, which are these little like paintbrush.
Just smashes through the rocks and coral and is
Yeah.
like, "What's up, guys?"
And he's also like a foot tall.
Yeah, tiny.
He's very small. He smashes through the rocks. He's like, oh crap, I wasn't supposed to let anybody through here. This is gonna suck. And he introduces they or rather Mael introduces him as Noko. He is a Gestrel. He is also a merchant, which is interesting.
Which is what all Gestrels are, apparently. That's
Yeah.
the like their thing.
Their thing, well, their thing is blowing rocks up and fighting, but also selling you stuff. But they
Yeah.
all that somehow if they can combine fighting and selling you stuff, they're
Yeah,
like
you gotta prove yourself before they sell you the good stuff.
before they This is a good video game, I think.
One of my favorite things about games or like new worlds to explore is when you kind of just get, we talked about this last session, but when you get just like tossed into the lore, the setting, with like not any explanations. And correct me if I'm wrong, but thus far, Gestrels have not been mentioned, right? So this the
There is a mention of Gestrels in Lumiere. There are some children with Gestrel masks. And you can talk to them, and they say, like, oh, we believe they exist. They're real.
I must have missed that dialogue
Yeah.
because I was like, Noko breaks through the rocks and Mael's like, I told you they're real. And I'm like, have we learned about you yet? Like, do we know what you are?
I think it's pretty easy to, from context clues, gather that like Gestrels are sort of like fairies, right? Or
Yeah,
elves, or there's some
fair.
kind of
It,
fae creature.
yeah.
Yeah. And they're certainly like doofy and odd, like fae are in
Yeah.
folk tales. Anyway, Noko says that he can take us to the Gestrel village and we can meet with the chief Golgra. Do you remember why he's I'm blanking on why we need to go meet the chief Golgra. Is it just to get help and supplies?
Yes, that sounds right, but that also sounds wrong. I'm gonna fact check
Well,
us really quick.
let me look it up
Okay,
for as the person
yeah, that's
who's
fair.
finished the game. Anyway, so you progress through the rest of the Flying Waters until you encounter a large Nevron who seems to be protecting a field of flowers. You fight him, he survives the fight. And Mael approaches him and says that he feels familiar, which is sort of odd. And he doesn't attack her immediately.
And at this point, I think this is the second time in dialogue, interacting with a Nevron where Lune is like, "Hey, maybe we should give us a chance to understand them," where Gustav's kind of taken the stance of like, "Fuck that, we're killing this guy,"
Yes.
which I think is a like really interesting kind of tension that they're creating between the characters and like what their stances are on surviving this expedition.
There's definitely some tension between what their ideas of staying safe and protecting themselves are. So the creature, flies away. Gustav, sort of chides Mael for not taking things seriously, not being safe. He's older brothering. He's very concerned for
Yeah.
her safety.
Despite the fact that she's like far more of a badass than he is.
And then they leave the flying waters. We emerge onto the open world. If you go to camp, there's a little bit of extra stuff where he and Mael sort of, talk about life. They talk about how terrible this experience has been, and Gustav delivers one of my favorite lines probably in the whole game, which is the thing I'll say all the time because I love the writing in this game. When they're talking about the difference between dying on the continent and dying in Lumiere to the Gommage, and they lay out like it's different. For sure, being killed by a monster in like a split second. But is that any worse or better than knowing exactly when you're going to die, feeling the inevitability of it, and just sort of
Being Dustin, yeah.
dying the whole way up to it?
Yeah.
And then I believe that's it. We're free to explore some of the side areas, but in terms of main story, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and that kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, but that seems like a, in terms of general story development and maybe the leading to the big reveal of like whatever the major plot point of this game is, it seems like that might be kind of a general story beat. Or at least that's like maybe my intention, or not intention, but my interpretation of like where the game is headed is like, explore an area or two and then like find another survivor. Like there's already, when you get to the overworld, map, you can interact with someone that is like has a line of dialogue that's like implies that there's more survivors to find, right? And I think that that seems like a, that's my kind of interpretation of where the game is headed, is like explore a zone or two, find out a little bit more about the world, find another companion who's had their own like experience, like Lune, Gustav, and Mael have since the landing on the continent. And you're kind of just like putting all those puzzle pieces together before the big reveal or the climax of the story.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair guess. Just a quick mention, the reason that they're going to go see the village chief Golgra is because Noko says that, oh, well, to get to the Paintress, you have to cross the sea. And they're like, well, we already did that. He goes, no, there's another sea.
Yeah, there's another sea, right?
So they're going to need a boat. They're going to need some way to get across the water. And that's why. But yeah, we have sort of entered the flow, the structure of the bulk of the remaining game. This is the you go to the next story area, you learn some stuff, you advance the plot, you maybe get some new abilities, and then open area with new stuff to explore. You go do that at your leisure. Some stuff you're like, ooh, too hard, I'll come back later. And then you hit your story beat when you're ready to go and move forward. It's very classic, sort of RPG structure. And I think it's a structure that works. It's good. If you want the extra stuff that's going to make you really powerful, go off the beaten path a little bit. Yeah, so what we sort of talked about visually for the flying waters. How do we want to do this? How do we want to break this down?
I don't know. I think that, there's a lot of things that we can talk about. The recap of the story beats, I think, covering that, if we wanted to break down more of the interpersonal communication between the characters, like how those relationships are starting to build between Gustav and Lune or Gustav and Mael, I think we can talk about that. But I think just, kind of a general discussion of like all the different things that we can interact with thus far is fine too.
What do you think of the manor? How did it make you feel to explore that manor? Because the first time I went in there, I had a very strong positive reaction. I really vibed with the music, curiously, and this is fans of the game will know. This is the one song that is not on the soundtrack.
Really?
This is the only
Why is
song.
that?
I
Do you
don't
know?
know. I believe that the composer Lorien Testard has said like he's gonna do something special with it. It's like his favorite piece, and he's gonna do something special with it. But it does not appear on the soundtrack or any of the like bonus versions of the soundtrack that have like
Interesting.
remixes or songs from the update content that came out a couple weeks ago or
I
months
mean,
ago.
there's definitely some like good marketing there, withholding the fan favorite thing until we can produce something bigger and better. I think that the first reaction that I had to the manor was like, oh, this is really pretty and it's pristine and I need to be on high alert. Like
Oh, yeah.
part of me knew that Mael was there, right? Like this was going to be the spot that we find her, but it felt like it was going to be like a recovery mission kind of situation. Like I knew she was alive. I've seen trailers of the game, but like part of me felt as if it was, or I should say rescue mission instead of recovery mission. So I was like wanting to be in stealth mode, despite the fact that there is no stealth mode for this game.
Yeah, you're being cautious.
This was like the man, I wish I had a manual save button that I could use every 5 feet. I kept waiting for like one of the doors to be available to go through, and then the fight to come. Meeting Mael and like going through that really positive, sad but positive reunion to have the curator appear in the door. I was like, all right, this is it. This is the one. This is what I've been waiting for. And then to have him be like, I think this is very indicative of the kind of theme of the game, which is everything is not as it seems. Like their experiences or their perception of the Grimage and the Paintress and the world at large beyond Lumiere is like not, does not meet their expectations. And of course, like all of the individual interactions with the Nevrons that are like, kind of displaced and in their own little like pain or thing that they're dealing with. And then the curator as well is very indicative of like that, right?
There,
And so,
there, there's a. It's clear that there's a lot that they don't know, that they don't understand.
yeah, I think that like they don't understand shit, really. Like they have like expedition knowledge, right? Like their knowledge is entirely built off of the loss of the previous expedition, the little bit of information that that expedition learns, and then their continued investment into like the technology that would advance them further than the previous expedition. But it seems like there wasn't a lot of open world knowledge that the expeditions like invested in that they brought back or that they were able to get back, right? It seems like thus far, at least with the like three journal entries that I found, right? There's not a lot of detail about the world at large that they provide. It's more of like dying words or like the, their own pain and suffering, versus like, oh, here's this really key factor that we found out about what's going on over here that would be really helpful. So I think it's an interesting way of like history kind of repeating itself and then like making the same mistakes as previous expeditions, but like having slightly better weaponry before they set out, I think that I wasn't like surprised that the curator wasn't actually the boss fight. And I was actually a little excited that like you have this human slash Nevron slash something in between or different creature that's like on your side.
He can upgrade your weapons and your expedition materials and give you Illumina points. He's a good guy. In
Anyone that hangs out at camp is
a cave.
in the dark
In
with no
the
face and floats.
it doesn't speak.
He tries.
He tries. He's making an
He just
effort.
doesn't, he doesn't, have the material in order to do so.
That's a good way of putting it. He is interesting to me. I really like his design. It's just sort of, it, like you're saying, we don't know what he is, and they don't know what he is, but they just have to take everything kind of as it comes and as far as they can understand it. And if he's looking after Mael and she says that he's cool, then he's got to be okay, right? And so they just kind of let him tag along. And he teaches you jump counters, so like how bad could he be?
I think that it's a really interesting perspective that the three of them have on Nevrons, because Gustav's like, I mentioned this before, but like Gustav's like, let's kill him. Let's not even question it. Lune's like, oh, let's learn more. And Mael's like, they're not bad. They're our friends. Like, or at least the like these things, she has like a much more like kind of, I don't know, like naive maybe because of youthfulness, but also like optimistic outlook on the future kind of situation. And I think that it's cool to see like kind of three different perspectives on like how to treat the surroundings. So yeah, it's just a it's cool conflict, internal conflict within the companions.
So we get Mael, she's our third party member. And they teach us quickly about like how her combat works. We've already talked about how Gustav is more of a pretty standard stuff, and he builds up a meter that like makes his super move better, right? The more that you charge it up, pretty very straightforward. Lune, more complicated. She has elemental spells, and those spells build up stains of different elements, which she can use in special ways to like enhance certain abilities or consume them for certain, bonuses to those abilities. Really like the interplay on skills. We talked about that a lot last time. And Mael's thing is stances. She's sort of a fencing style fighter. She uses like a fencing sword. She takes three different, four different stances, right? Four? Does she start in one, or is it just normal?
No, she starts in stanceless.
Yes. Okay. So
And
there's, yeah, there's stanceless, which is just nothing. There's no change. Then her different moves will transition her into different stances. There's offensive, which is extra damage dealt and received. Defensive, which is less damage given out, but also less damage received. And there's a virtuous, which is just double damage.
right.
Like it's just better.
Yeah.
And it becomes sort of similar to Lune's stains. It becomes a balancing act of when is the right time to switch into each stance? How can I chain my moves together to create these cycles where I'm not only in the stance that I need, but I'm also in the stance that's going to be able to boost my next move that I need to use. So again, we're getting into the meat of the game of its mechanics where things start to get fairly complicated. But I like how they dole it out piecemeal, right? Bit by bit, so that you have time to sort of learn how Lune works, learn how your setup is going to work. Then you get Mael. You learn how Mael works, and then you'll get some other party members. And what do you think of Mael's fighting style? You said that she was more badass than anybody.
I feel like that was more of a review of like her personality as a character,
Oh, okay.
more so than commenting on combat. I would say that I have not really caught on to the nuance of combat mechanics yet for each individual character. This is probably like my, as a video game player, like my least favorite thing to pay attention to. Like, I'm far more interested in the story or the graphics or the dialogue than I am finding out how to, like, this is the min-maxing, right, of a game, of a character, and this is the thing that I'm like least paying attention to, because it's like you get a weapon, right? You get a weapon upgrade, or you get a different weapon from a loot drop. And then the primary stats for that effectiveness just change, right? So it's like, oh, I've invested in this weapon, but now I have a weapon that does like 100 more damage than the weapon I've been using. And it's the same level, but now it's like stats that I haven't been investing in. So to me, like, feels a little pointless to care too much about combat. Especially because I'm playing on normal mode anyways, the normal difficulty. And so unless I'm fighting a chromatic version of a Nevron, I'm like guaranteed to win combat. It's I'm
The
like
game is
I'd
not very hard.
it's not
There
meant
are
to be,
spikes in
for
difficulty,
sure.
but and there's lots of optional challenge, tough fights. But you can sort of brute force your way through just doing whatever is going to just feel good to do, or whatever comes freely, what comes available. The min-maxing on the stuff, like the developers have said multiple times, people are like, "Hey, I think I broke your game because I'm doing like a stupid amount of damage." And they're like, "Nope, that's as intended. We built it so that you can just beat the game playing it normal. And if you're a sicko and you want to min-max, you're gonna have a different kind of fun. Like, and
Yeah.
this game is also for you."
Yeah, and there's been a few times where like I have unintentionally done like 15,000 damage and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck just happened. Like I get the core concepts of like building up Gustav to use overcharge. I get that, right? I get when to trigger different stances. I get the basic concept of applying certain stains to use other abilities. But at the core of combat to me is the first character that goes, you shoot their weaknesses, and then just pay attention to parrying or dodging and not taking damage. And if you don't take any damage, or if you can not take any damage and parry, that's how you're going to win combat easily, because half the time your parry is like way more powerful than anything that you do with your basic skills. So I think that, like, and this is like a good indicator of that, not to like jump into other things that you can experience on the overworld map, but like the Gestral,
The hidden
secret, the
gestural arena.
yeah the hidden arena. Like, the first I chose Julian Tinyhead as the first
Do
choice.
you have their names written down somewhere?
I have it pulled up. I'm in the arena right now.
Can you want to read these to me? Because so just to set the stage, this is part of the open world area after Flying Waters. There's like three or four different little side areas you can go into. One of them is the Hidden Gestral Arena, where there are Gestrals doing one-on-one fights. You send only one character into the fight, and they have
And you
names.
choose the opponent that you want to destroy you.
That is how it's put to you. Also, if you talk to any of them while they're just like standing off to the side, they also have the same thing, which is, I'm gonna break your fingers. Is kind of specific. What are their names, Cadmore?
Yeah, you, and this is the order of difficulty too. And I guessed that, and I still went against my instincts and chose the most difficult one. Because it was the most fun name to me. But it's Matu the Colossus, Bertrand Big Hands, Dominique Giant Feet, and Julian Tiny Head.
Julian Tiny Head. Do you I don't remember which one of them it is. The Gestral who's like hosting, lets you choose which one
Yeah.
you're gonna fight, has a little
Bagara.
comment. Yeah, he has a little comment about each one of them. And I think it was Julian Tinyhead. He just goes like, this dude looks weird.
Yeah.
This guy's strange.
So I chose Julian Tinyhead first, and I think I picked Gustav, who has the lowest defense of the three of them, because I hadn't put any points into defense yet. And he got hit once because I missed my parry, and I hadn't learned their animations yet for their attacks. And he just basically one-shotted me, and I was like, fuck this. This is another spot where it's just too soon to come here. And then I was like, you know what? Let's try one more. One of these is going to be easy. And so I started out, I had this instinct of like, okay, I should have just started at the top and worked down. And that's how it ended up working, where it was just easiest at the top, and then hardest at the bottom, and the
Yeah,
dialogue
if you
options.
pick the first guy, the one at the top,
Yeah, he's like, he's the weakest.
Yeah, Bagara says, ooh, good choice. He's the weakest.
Yeah. So I picked him, and then I got kind of in the rhythm, because they all, except for Mateo the Colossus,
I think it's Matthew.
is
It's
it?
just yeah, it's just a French spelling of Matthew.
Okay. Matthew the Colossus. He attacks once, but everyone else attacks twice in the initiative tracker. They like do double attacks, and then you, and then double attacks. And so I kind of got like the rhythm down, beat him pretty easily with my parries, and then I was like, okay, I'll try it again. And then I wasn't able to defeat Julian, but I was able to defeat the rest of them. So that was fun. And then, so there's this secret zone, and then my favorite so far experience with the game. And this is the
Oh
most,
man, I can't wait.
this is the thing that I wanted to text you about and say, I hate you for making me play this.
I know exactly what it's
Is
gonna be.
and I've been to France. I have experienced French culture. I don't think that I could ever say this until this moment, but like, parkour, parkour in a French video game is the most French thing that you can experience.
It's truly incredible. So you're, of course, speaking about the Gestral Beach.
The Gestral Beach, yes. And you enter the zone, and there's a fat Gestral just chilling. And you go over and you talk to him, and he's like, "Oh, human, are you here for swimsuits?" And you're like, yeah, I'm totally here for swimsuits. What are you talking about? And he's like, oh, well, my buddy Jestro, he's like a professional swimsuit maker and he's over there, but you can't get to him unless you do the parkour course. And I can't do it, which means you definitely can't do it. And I'm like, all right, dude, whatever. And then so I exit the dialogue and I look behind him. And I'm like, oh my God, that looks heinous.
It looks like, I don't know, oh man, now I'm gonna forget the name of the video game. What is that game that's like they look like Wipeout courses, right?
Yeah,
They're
yep.
like, it's like wooden spinning platforms and like pegs and tricky little jumps with like holes in the bottom of the platform, things that are moving back and forth. It's all complete nonsense. It's not a real structure.
How many times did it take you the first time around to do
So
this?
this is interesting. The first time I went to the Jestral Beach on my very first playthrough, I did this in one attempt sprinting.
No, you fucking didn't.
Yeah, I just like
No chance.
threw myself at it and did it. The second time on this current playthrough, it took me 17 tries. I took notes. It took me 17 tries to get to the end. How?
I cannot believe you did it on first try. There's
Yeah,
no
I couldn't
way.
either. I was like, there's no way I'm ever going to be able to replicate that. And I was right.
This is my one of my favorite experiences in a video game is when you get shit like this, right? Where it's like you're not going to get hurt. This is just like a fun little side quest mini game, right? And it's all about timing. It's about perfect, no drag on the joystick, timing your jumps while sprinting, not falling off the platform, right? And it's one of those things where like you just have to keep going until you finish it. Because once you've started and you've hit that like rush of dopamine and simultaneously experienced the most frustrating thing ever, you're like, I can't quit until this is done. And so funny, and it took 47 attempts
Oh my God.
to make it
That's a
to
lot. Yeah,
47 attempts to make it through the first three logs.
wow.
Right? Because going slow is bad, but going slow offers you the ability to catch yourself if you start to fall. But sprinting spits you off super fast. You just like bounce off stuff. But sprinting is the only way to make it the distance that you need to get to the other log. And I found it easier to just sprint and hold the joystick in one spot. Right, and time the jumps. It's just tricky because if you're off even a little bit,
Yeah, it's a very
then
narrow platform.
right. And the logs are offset by like, 6 pixels. So you can't be straight on the jump. You have to like go just a smidge to the side. 47 attempts to make it across the logs. Then jumping onto the first spinning platform was fine, but Mael, because I was in sprints when I jumped, rolled out of the sprint because I didn't hit the stakes that are
Pegs,
on the pegs, and so she rolled straight into the hole.
yeah.
Another 3 attempts to get back across. So muscle memory's already kicked in,
Yeah.
right? 3 more attempts to get back across. First platform, fine. Second platform, she jumping off of the one with the pegs onto the open platform. Classic, like jumping off of a moving object onto a moving object. She just like shot sideways. And
Yeah.
I was like, I know for a fact I timed that right. And I was like, that was true physics for like a human being attempting to do this thing. And so, 1 attempt to get back. And then I don't know what happened this time, but jumping from the second spinning platform to the third spinning platform, she rolled into the hole
Into
again.
the
And then I nailed it. So, the 49 attempts or whatever, something like that. But each one, it went from 47 to 3 to 1 to 1. And then I got the swimsuit. He's like, "Oh, are you here for a swimsuit?" And you're like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Oh, cool. Well, I'm not a professional swimsuit maker." Psych, like, I am a professional swimsuit maker. And then he gives you one, and you're like, "That's it? What gives?" And he's like, "What do you want from me?" "All right, fine. Here's another one." And then he gives you one for Lune as well.
Yeah, if you ask him again, he goes, "What? You think I'm just gonna give you another one?" And you're like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Well, you're right." And he gives you a third one.
A second one.
But so, yes, the second one, yeah.
And then so you jump in the water, you like spawn back on the beach, and then I did it one more time just because I'm a sicko and I wanted to like see if my muscle memory stuck, and so I was able to do it all in one go that time,
Nice.
for funsies. But I would love to see a like straight continuous run of someone like not stopping at all, taking those corners on the logs, and then jumping, running straight over, jumping, running straight over, jumping. Like I would love to see just like the speed run of that.
Yeah. So Janet Garcia, who is a writer and a podcast host for Remap Radio and the Mid-Max podcast, when she was talking about this game, she compared it. She had a theory, and I support this theory, which is that so before this, the sort of big, I would say the like tentpole big RPG release just before this was, it's Baldur's Gate 3 and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Final
Okay.
Fantasy VII Rebirth famously has like 20 billion different mini games, and generally people hate them. People think that they're really bad. I tend to like them most for the most part.
Okay.
But they are all different. They are all different mechanics. They all have different controls. All of them are, yes, to some degree, rather frustrating to play. And to get like the best rewards from them, including like to get the platinum trophy for the game, you have to do all of them at their highest difficulty and get like basically the highest possible score. You have to do them all perfectly. She was talking about how, the movement in this game is a little bit stiff. It's not really designed for platforming. And she posits that Sandfall Interactive played Final Fantasy VII Rebirth and they were like, you know what? We can put mini games in our game. And they're also going to be bad on purpose. They're like, let's see what we can make these people do for funny costumes. I bet we can make them jump on logs for hours on end, just trying to make this sweaty, bad platforming work.
Yep.
And I believe it.
You give people skins, they will do
I'll
anything.
do
They
it.
will
I'm
spend
me.
thousands of dollars
I'm
and hundreds
bitches.
of hours.
I'll do anything. I'll do anything for different costumes. That's my whole jam.
Yeah, and it's like the most quintessential French costume that you can get, which is
Oh, yeah.
like what? That's like 1930s, 1940s, like pinstriped swimsuits.
Yes. Yeah. The
Yeah.
striped and white swimsuit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I love the Just for Beach, and I'm glad that you enjoyed it because there will be other mini games.
Excellent. Cool.
Spoiler, there will be
It
other
did
mini games.
annoy me because it looks like you should be able to get to the other side of the island when you first get there, and you cannot, correct? Yeah. There's a lot of like land over there that looks playable, like there would be something.
Yeah, it's just to give the impression that,
Yeah.
the beach is quite big, but, there's really only this is where the game is.
Yeah. In terms of other things that are on the map that are accessible at this time, right? There
I
is
can think of two other things.
the small burgeon.
Yeah, I think it's pronounced Bujon.
Yeah. But I, as we established earlier in the episode during the intro, I don't speak French.
That's true.
And then, so there you encounter a little baby version,
Little baby.
Nevron, of the big Nevron that you saw but didn't fight in the Flying Waters, correct? And he's like,
There is one you can fight.
the yes, but it's like a medium-sized one, not the one that's a monolith.
Not the giant ones.
Yeah. And so when you fight that one and the medium-sized one in the Flying Waters, it drops a item, right? That you don't really know what it does yet. And then if
Nevron
you
flesh.
skin.
Skin, yes.
Yeah. And when you meet the small one, he's like, ah, I need help. I need to grow. And you're like, all right, like, what do I need to give you? And he's like, the skin of my own people. And you're like, what the fuck? And he's like, yeah, you just give me some of it and I'll get bigger. And then I get bigger and I can help you with stuff. And you're like, all right, oh wait, I happen to have that already. Here you go. And then he's like, okay, come back after you sleep. And that's it.
Did you come back?
I haven't yet because I haven't rested yet. So
Oh. Yeah, you should do that. That's funny.
yeah.
That's good. So this is another one of the white Nevrons. We had one in the Spring Meadows. We had another one in Flying Waters. Did you find him?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, the one who needs a sea mine.
Correct. Yeah, that one was easy. I mean, that's a little bit of a mini game there too,
Little
jumping
platforming
around.
challenge.
Yeah.
These white Nevrons all seem to talk about the Paintress, right? They're talking about like, oh, their mistress, and they want her attention, they want her light, they want her guidance. They seem lost and they're non-hostile. You do have the option to fight all of them. Have you fought any of them?
No, why would I fight things that aren't attacking me?
Yeah, it's a good. That's probably a good
I didn't want to
attitude to
kill them.
take.
Do they not die if you attack them?
No, they die if you attack them.
Okay, yeah, then I don't want to do that.
Okay. I was just curious. I didn't
Yeah.
either. I guess this touches on one of the like biggest surprises in this game for me is that it's really fucking funny.
Yeah, there's a lot of surprising humor.
It's really funny. The Gestrels are really funny. They just have a funny way of speaking. I don't know if we've painted a picture of like what they look like, but they are like wooden. They look like wooden dolls, right? The kind of dolls that like have ball and socket joints that you can sort of animate and pose. They're all very bulky. They look like scratched up and beaten, and they have these masks for faces. And their hair is just—it looks like a paintbrush. Like it's this sort
Yeah.
of frilly. Usually, it's colored like green or purple or blue or red. And when they speak, I don't know
You can
how,
understand like three words on
like,
occasion.
yeah, so they speak in sort of this like gobliny gremlin voice that uses like a really thick French accent. And some of the words are actual the words that are being said, you know, in the dialogue box. And then some of them are French, and then some of them are just gibberish, just. Exactly. A lot of them will be like, oh, blah 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 blah, and you're like, I believe that Noko, when he's talking to Gustav, and Gustav sort of says like, hey, I like your he calls him a brush head. That's what he says. He's like,
Yeah.
well, who are you to tell me where to go, little brush head? And he Noko goes, oh, mustachio, like he says
Yeah.
mustachio.
Yeah.
They're funny. They're I love the
Super cute.
Gestrels. They're
Yeah.
cute. They're very funny. They're very like stupid coded in a way that's delightful.
And very French, like just,
Just very French. It's very
yeah.
French sense of humor. That's sort of just like it's basically like toddler humor, right? Make
Yeah.
a goofy sound. Someone asks you a question and you just respond with like an extremely dry, blunt answer.
Yeah, it's like they're a weird combination of like toddler speak and toddler, like the target of toddler humor. Like I'm gonna make fun of this simple thing, right? This low-hanging fruit, but it's like elevated in, like there's more meaning behind it. There's more adult meaning behind the thing that they're making fun of. So.
It's also just so consistent, right? They're all just consistently like stupid, and you ask them a question. Oh, so this is the thing you didn't we that neither of us mentioned is when you get there, he goes, "Oh, you think it's so easy to get a swimsuit? Well, pop quiz, I'm gonna ask you this question. You did this, right?"
Yeah, what is the question again?
He asks you a math question, and
Oh,
he
yeah.
says, "If I'm two right now, how many," or something like that. It's basically, if I'm like 2 years old, or if I was born right now, how many years would I live before I go Maj? And so you think, well, it's 33, so it's, oh, but it's not 33, because for every year that you age up, the go Maj calendar goes
Goes
down.
down. Yeah.
So he gives you like six different options. So people with test anxiety are freaking out because they have no idea. It does not matter which one you pick, because whatever one you pick, he goes, "Yeah, I don't know. That's probably right.
Yeah, I can't count.
I
I
can't
can't
count."
count. Yeah.
And he just gives it to you anyway. You could say like, "Oh, 33," and he's like, "Sure, I don't know."
Yep, here's the swimsuit.
Yeah, here's a swimsuit. Oh, they're great.
There's two more zones that you can visit. There's the Abyss Cave, which
Yes, back by the Spring Meadows.
yes, which I discovered first, and disappointed that I discovered first, because it you fight a chromatic abyss, which is already difficult Nevron to fight, and the chromatic versions are like the boss versions of each one of the Nevrons. And there's chromatic versions of the Nevrons that you can just run into out in the world, and this guy will pretty much one-shot your party. Not one-shot, but will like two-shot each individual person in the party if you don't dodge. And no matter how well you min-max your character's skills and how much you parry him, you're not going to like you ha would have to nail every single combat mechanic and sustain that for a extended period of time in order to defeat this guy. So.
The chromatic Nevrons are, as we've mentioned, the challenge versions of Nevrons. They have similar fighting styles to the base version. They have a stupid amount more health and more damage. They're meant to be like, if you think you've got this one down, and you get good rewards for them, usually upgrade materials, or usually it's a really good Picto.
Yeah. And
That's
then there's one more spot.
Yes.
There's Eske's Nest.
Eske's Nest, yeah.
Yeah. Which you go in, there's some Lumina, right? Or not Lumina, but
Chroma.
Chroma on the ground. There's two Chroma on the ground. And then there's another Gestrel that's like, hey, I can't let you in here until you discover. This is the one that's. Says until you discover a companion.
He says password. He says you need the
Pa oh,
password.
password. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one Gestrel out in the world that specifically like says something along the lines of like I can't sell to you until you discover a companion, another
Oh, there's
companion or
certain
something.
items, yeah, that you can't
Yeah.
buy that say like, "Hey, you need to discover another expeditioner."
Right. Yeah. But if I'm not wrong, Eske is the name of one of the people on the expedition, right? No? Because I specifically remember seeing that name somewhere in
Yes.
Lumiere.
In Lumiere, there is a woman who has finished her sculpture of the mythical Eskier.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, who she says is like kind of a is kind of maybe like a Gestrel. It's
Okay,
another
interesting.
like, here's this mythical figure, but because since the fracture, we haven't seen these guys, so who knows if they're real,
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I knew it was something that we've encountered. Just I couldn't recall exactly where it came from.
So Eskier is a character. I mean, we will go back to this location. But there's nothing to do there right now other than those two little items. And talk to the guy who says you need a password.
Yeah.
One thing I guess I want to make sure that we touch on, is the music. I texted you the other day, or just yesterday. How is the music even better my second time through?
And I said, because you're a fucking nerd, that's why.
And it's true. It's true. I adore the music in this game. That is a cold take. People are nuts about the music in this game. Everybody likes it. I love the way that it like has the sort of like very classical. There's a lot of stringed instruments. There's a lot of like, choral singing. Well, not choral. There's like a soloist. But this is very like grand sounding, almost operatic singing. And then you start fighting things in Flying Waters, and there's like synths and techno beats and like huge bass drops. And then you back on the overworld and you get these like really intense, hyper loud, hyper fun and energetic bits of music. When you fight mimes, there's an accordion that's playing the melody. Like, it's rules.
Did
This
it,
stuff
did I
is so
miss
good.
another mime encounter?
There's another mime in Flying Waters, yeah.
Is there really? Can I go back through Flying Waters?
There was only like one thing in the entire, or two things in the entire game that were like missable in the release version, and they have since patched those items to appear later. The only thing that is still permanently missable is the mime in Lumiere. Everything else in the game you can go back to and get. Or
Interesting. Yeah.
did you got the key right at the Expedition Festival? It's like an old key or whatever.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
If you don't get it, there's a door way later that like you just can't get into. And they have moved that key to be available somewhere in the game after that,
Yeah.
just in
Yeah,
case.
I have the old key.
Before that was like the only thing that you couldn't do. Everything else, yeah, you can go back.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I kind of felt like there was going to be a mime per story level kind of situation, or I've been on the lookout for them and I haven't. I didn't see one in Flying Waters, so.
Yep, there's one.
Yeah, so the music is like very it's interesting, I think, as an adult to like go back and rewatch movies that you liked as a kid, or maybe movies that you didn't like as a kid, and start to recognize like how the soundtrack, how the music plays an impact on your response, how your body responds to, especially in like horror or kind of like psychological thriller or like particularly sad movies, how things hit changes your reaction, right? Like how your body reacts. And this is one of those games where I'm like constantly stopping, like playing the game just to like pay attention to the music in the background. And I think that's interesting because I think that has not been the case for a lot of major, like, impact the entire industry games that I've played. I've experienced it with Baldur's Gate too. You mentioned that earlier, where that is a game where I'm like frequently, like especially now that I'm on an additional playthrough, I'm like stopping and enjoying the soundtrack even more in particular zones. Like House of Mercy, right, is a very popular kind of iconic piece. But this game in particular, I'm like frequently stopping and just like listening to it. I was really excited to encounter a Gestrel that sold another record that I could play
Oh,
back at camp. And I played it and I was like, oh, this is sick. And then I still just put Lumiere back on
Yes,
because it's so good.
it is. It's a good one. The music is, it's just incredible. I love it. I mean, I listen to it like all the time.
And I know you are the kind of person in the time that we've known each other, you are the kind of person that like puts video game soundtracks on their Spotify or their Apple Music or whatever and like listens to it outside of the game. And this is like one of the few times I've ever experienced like interest in listening to video game music outside of the video game. So I think that is something of note.
Specifically, like you said, like putting the game down and just listening to the music for a while. The first time I entered the manor and I heard that like very quiet sort of piano music, and there's like these distant voices that just like occasionally come in and just say like, I think they just chant or they just say like, yeah. And there's just this, it's very quiet, it's just very eerie, but it's also like sort of soothing. It has sort of a music box quality to it. I seriously like put my controller down and just sat and like stared at the screen and just absorbed the vibes of the music. That song is great. It's if you want to look it up, it's called Our Painted Family. It's very, very good. I just like all the fight songs are just superb and energetic and fun. I think the mime fight song is probably one of my favorites. That
It's like,
accordion.
yeah, so classically French.
I mean, the game oozes French, which is so fun. It's like such a unique. How many games have we played about, you know, British or rather just like vague Western style fantasy and architecture like that, and like very clearly British culture, or British imperial sort of style. How
Yeah,
many
the
games
Imperial.
have we played about Vikings? How many games have there been about samurai or ninjas and sort of that, you know, the Shogun or Warring States period of Japan? Like, it's all over. There's so many games in that vein. There are so few that are just like, yeah, this is about the Eiffel Tower and baguettes,
And it's not tacky. It's not like
No.
it's cliche in a good way,
It comes
right?
across as fun. Like
Fun,
it's.
like we're making fun of ourselves, but we're also extremely proud of us as a culture.
It's delightful. Truly great, truly great. Is there anything else? I guess we didn't talk about. Honestly, there's not a ton of like big story content in this section.
No, we're still ramping up.
We're ramping up. And there will be a lot to talk about in the next episode. But yeah, did anything strike you? That conversation that Gustav and Mael have is really good. I really like it. Most of Flying Waters is just chit chat and talking about like the architecture of like what looks like Lumiere streets, and they sort of imply that like, well, when the fracture happened, literal chunks of Lumiere were like blown all over the world. They sort of comment on that. They comment whenever you find an expeditioner journal, and you can read those. And like you said, it's mostly just about like the personal experiences. It's not, none of them are like, and here is what we've learned about the lore. It's just like, oh shit, my buddy got bit by a monster and now he's gonna die, and that's really sad to me.
No, I think we covered like there's not a ton of story beats in this particular section, but that's not a bad thing because this is your first opportunity to explore the world and start to get an idea of what the continent looks like and how the rest of the gameplay is going to be formatted, right?
And there will continue to be more mechanical and traversal evolutions as the game goes. There will be more things to do, and they'll keep it fresh for sure. Is there any chance that you would like to, I was gonna say maybe we could extend the length of the next section of the game, but there's also quite a bit of, so for,
Here's the thing. Here's the
okay.
thing. I've done all of my homework for this week already.
Okay. In preparation for
Everything,
playing Clair
it, more like in preparation of having to work 40 plus hours and also do 4 plus hours of homework every day on top of 3 nights of classes and other things. I have turned everything in, including like essays, assignments, quizzes have been taken. So if you
Nice.
wanted to do a slightly larger section, then let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay, so for our next section, we will cover the ancient sanctuary, the Gestral Village, and Eskier's Nest. That'll be the next
Excellent.
location we go to. Then there's quite a bit of open world stuff that expands from that point. Feel free to do it. Our cutoff is don't go to the Stone Wave Cliffs.
Okay. Do not go to Stoneway Cliffs.
Stone Wave Cliffs.
Stone Way of Cliffs.
Stone Wave, not way of,
Stone
but
Wave.
wave.
Wave. Okay.
Yeah.
Stone Wave Cliffs.
Stone Wave Cliffs.
Okay.
And let me just check and make sure that that is correct. I'm pretty sure that that's the way to go. Looking through the chapters, walk through. Yes, Stone Wave Cliffs is the next part of the game that we will stop at. We'll stop before we go in. Like, don't go into the Stone Wave Cliffs. Just leave that
Go
unexplored.
into the Stone Wave Cliffs. Got it.
Yeah, go directly in, beat them. When you
Beat the
hit
cliffs. Yep.
credits, then you know that you're done.
That you've gone too far.
Yeah, play the remaining 60 hours of the It's not that long. Though it could be, I don't know.
We're gonna make it that
We'll
long.
see. You know what? You'll see how long the end of this game is.
I don't know what that means.
Yep.
I don't know how to take that.
I will say, and this is not a spoiler.
Which mean which means it is.
No, the majority of my complaints about this game, and again, I think this game's amazing. This is my game of the year, but the majority of my complaints.
That's because it was the game of the year.
Played lots of other great games.
Yes, but it was the 2025 game of the year.
It's that good, okay? The majority of my gripes and complaints are entirely focused on stuff that is in the end of the game. And I'm not talking
Okay.
like story content. I'm saying just like the structure of how the end of the game is.
Interesting. All right.
But that will be it for now. Anything else you want to say, Cadmore?
L'addition, s'il vous plaît.